Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Katie Weaver and Brian Lynn. Later, Ashley and I will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, in eastern Indonesia, cut trees block a road that leads to Papuan villages. Along Thailand's border with Myanmar, the Karen people have put up signs warning visitors to stay away. Around the world, the coronavirus pandemic has left indigenous peoples at risk because so many are in poor health. Indigenous groups also have few doctors available to treat them in their communities, mostly rural areas. There are, naturally, large differences among these native peoples, including diet and socioeconomic conditions. The United Nations estimates that the life expectancy of indigenous people can be up to 20 years lower than that of other people. Australia's government has noted how large the differences can be. In March, the government warned that indigenous people aged over 50 should stay home whenever possible for their own protection. The age was 10 to 20 years higher for other population groups. The strong guidance for indigenous people is likely because so many have the kinds of health issues that can lead to serious problems if they get the coronavirus. United Nations records state that more than half of indigenous adults over 35 around the world have type 2 diabetes. They also have higher levels of heart problems, the virus that causes AIDS, and diseases such as tuberculosis. Genetics may be part of the reason for poor health among indigenous people, says Mason Dury. He is a professor of Maori studies at Massey University in Australia. Dury himself is also Maori. He believes the true reason, however, are social conditions, such as poverty and a lack of education. Many indigenous people are now cutting themselves off from the world, says Rudolph Reiser. He is an indigenous activist and head of the Center for World Indigenous Studies. They simply closed down and blocked the roads going into their territories, he said. But that creates another problem. Indigenous people returning to their villages from cities might bring the coronavirus with them. And some villages, such as the Aboriginal ones in Australia, are not prepared to fight the virus. There is crowding in many homes and poor public services, said Mark Winnetong. He is an Aboriginal doctor and serves as advisor to Aboriginal health organizations in Australia. Indigenous people were already struggling to keep their traditions and hold out against the modern world. The people of the Amazon rainforest have long fought off miners and farmers who have begun to work the land around them. Social restrictions put in place to contain the pandemic are also threatening the way of life of some groups. In Uganda, The Batwa people are facing food shortages because of stay-at-home orders. The military is trying to stop them from moving across the border into Rwanda, explains Faith Tushabe. She works with a local aid group. The Batwa usually trade work for food, but they cannot do that now. The Maasai are a semi-nomadic indigenous people in Kenya and Tanzania. They have been forced to stop important celebrations that bring different groups together to discuss issues of property or marriage. The coronavirus pandemic is forcing major changes, said Benjamin Tamayo, a Maasai youth leader. It will totally interfere with culture and tradition, and we are living through culture and tradition, he said.
Stuck inside his room at an assisted living center, Bob Coleman knew he could not go out in public with the coronavirus spreading. But he could still connect with others by sharing his love for country music over the internet. "Hello, everybody. It's a bright day in Franklin, Tennessee," he said into his microphone. "This is Bob Coleman, better known as the Karaoke Cowboy, coming to you from room 3325. Let's just jump right into it." Then Coleman began to play the music he loves. Hits from country music stars like Hank Williams, Dwight Yoakam, and Brad Paisley. The 88-year-old carefully chooses each song. Coleman is a resident of Summerbee Franklin, an assisted living center about 32 kilometers south of Nashville. He formerly served in the United States Air Force. He and several other retirees have turned into disc jockeys, or DJs, for a new online radio hour known as Radio Recliner. The 60-minute show was launched last month, starting with retirees in Middle Tennessee. It has since expanded with residents of assisted living centers in Georgia and Alabama taking part in the project. Many jumped at the chance to work as a DJ to ease the loneliness of social distancing rules. Older adults are at high risk from the new coronavirus. At most assisted living facilities, not only are visitors barred, but so is socializing with other residents. A Georgia and Alabama-based marketing company called Lucky came up with the idea of Radio Recliner. One of its clients is Bridge Senior Living, which operates more than 20 centers for older adults in 14 states. The volunteer DJs record themselves on their phones. The audio is then sent to audio production specialists who deal with the technical side of Radio Recliner. New shows appear weekdays at 12 o'clock. Listeners can send song requests in honor of family or friends. For example, listeners might hear a message like this: "Hey, Granny, this is your favorite granddaughter, Amy. We just wanted to call in and say we love you very much." Mitch Bennett is Lucky's chief creative officer. He says the idea was to provide a sense of community to older people who have been spending a lot of time alone. For this generation, radio was the original social media, Bennett said. dedicating a song to someone you love, and having them hear it along with everyone else is a special way of connecting. It's a great time to bring that feeling back. In Georgia, 80-year-old Ed Rosenblatt said an hour he spent playing songs on radio recliner resulted in a flood of text messages, emails, and calls from family and friends. Rosenblatt said many of the messages were from people he had not heard from for years. He prepared a special close for his radio recliner hour. For the past year, I've been teaching myself how to play the ukulele, said Rosenblatt, who lives at Summerbee Sandy Springs, just outside of Atlanta. So, at the close of the show, I actually played a song on my ukulele. I sang and played the Sloop John B. Everybody knows that song, Rosenblatt said. I'm Katie Weaver.
Governments around the world are turning to scientific research and technology to fight the coronavirus. Experts on technology have begun thinking about what life will be like after the virus is defeated. Some are predicting an increase in demand for voice-controlled systems to perform tasks without the need for human touch. Voice-activated systems such as Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant have already experienced strong growth in recent years. Experts say the coronavirus crisis could drive even more growth as many people seek technology to replace physical touch. Health officials have suggested one way to reduce the risk of the virus spreading is to clean and disinfect surfaces that people touch. Jonathan Collins is research director for ABI Research, a service that helps organizations face technology issues. He says voice-activated systems in homes can mean avoiding commonly touched surfaces to control smartphones, televisions, lighting, doors, and heating systems. Collins said the coronavirus crisis is likely to drive additional motivation and incentive for home voice controllers. The French news agency AFP reported his comments. ABI estimates that shipments for voice control devices for smart home use hit 141 million worldwide last year. It predicts that number could grow by about 30% in 2020. An estimate by Juniper Research showed the number of voice assistants in use for all purposes reached 4.2 billion devices this year. Juniper estimates the number could grow to 8 billion by 2023. Avi Greengart is a technology expert with market research company Texponential. He told AFP he expects a wider choice of business uses for voice technologies as companies now face new health and safety concerns. Looking forward, office spaces will need to move towards more touch-free controls, Greengart said. Voice-activated systems can be one solution, along with motion sensors to control lighting, he added. I do expect smart speakers, along with an emailed list of commands, to be a common feature at hotels and other rental properties. The fewer touch points, the better, Greengart added. Julian Issa follows technology for FutureSource Consulting. He notes there had already been rising use of voice assistants since the coronavirus crisis began. But he said most of the increase is likely not driven by people trying to avoid touching surfaces. Instead, more people are using the assistants because they are spending far more time with their devices while staying at home. British-based Voxley Digital develops voice apps for Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant. It reported last month that 48% of people in Britain said they were using voice assistants more since being home because of the coronavirus. About one-fourth of British homes own a smart speaker. 21% of users in the study said they had used voice assistants twice as much or more since the pandemic began. Voxley Digital also reported that 40% of users predicted they would continue to use voice apps more once the crisis is over. British Advertising Industry Group, IAB UK, published research showing large increases in online listenership during April, the website voicebot.ai reported. In the United States, the Nielsen Company reported radio listening was up among nearly a third of the population, including 10% more people listening on smart speakers. Experts say they expect other growth areas for voice assistants to be in industries that deal with large numbers of people every day. These include healthcare centers, large retail businesses, and entertainment companies. One example is a medical tool already in use at the world-famous Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. The tool uses Amazon Alexa to give people information about signs of the virus and related information. Vitan Kapuska is a computer engineering professor at the Florida Institute of Technology. He specializes in speech recognition technologies. He told AFP he is seeking to develop voice-activated robots that could take over many tasks from doctors or nurses from a safe distance. Kapuska explained, "The pandemic has created a situation where we need to think about how to deliver services to people who need our help without putting ourselves in danger." I'm Brian Lynn.
Our National Parks journey continues with one of the most popular and beautiful places in America, Grand Canyon National Park in the state of Arizona. The Grand Canyon is one of the seven natural wonders of the world and one of the largest canyons on Earth. It stretches for 450 kilometers. Parts of the canyon are more than 30 kilometers wide and 1 kilometer deep. Many writers have tried to describe the wonder of the Grand Canyon. They use words like mysterious, overpowering, and strange. But it is not possible to put human meaning to such a place. The Grand Canyon truly is beyond words.
this your first time at the Grand Canyon?
Yes.
And what do you think? Do you have a few words to describe it?
Beautiful, amazing.
What do you think of the Grand Canyon?
Oh, very huge and very colorful.
Do you have some words to describe what you're seeing?
Amazing. It's so amazing when I see it at the first look.
The canyons of America's Southwest are deep, ancient openings in the earth. They look as if they formed as the earth split apart. In reality, rivers formed these canyons. 40 million years ago, the Colorado River began cutting through the area around the present-day Grand Canyon. The river carried dirt and pieces of stone that slowly ate away at the surrounding rock. It left a pathway of enormous rock openings. At the same time, forces deep within the earth pushed up the surrounding land. Rain, snow, ice, wind, and plant roots rubbed away at the top of this new canyon. Below, the river continued to uncover more and more levels of ancient rock. Some of the exposed rocks along the Grand Canyon's walls are nearly 2 billion years old. They are among the oldest rocks on Earth, with many levels of granite, schist, limestone, and sandstone.
The Grand Canyon measures 2,500 meters from the canyon floor to its highest point. Because of its size, the weather at the top of the canyon is often much different from the bottom. On some winter days, for example, you may find cold winds and snow at the top. But at the bottom of the canyon, you may find warm winds and flowers. The Grand Canyon is home to some 2,000 plant species. Some of these species can only be found in the park. The park is also home to more than 370 species of birds, 90 kinds of mammals, and 40 kinds of reptiles. Many of the birds spend their whole lives in the Grand Canyon. Other species depend on the Grand Canyon for food and shelter during large migrations. The Grand Canyon was named a globally important bird area in 2014 because of the role it plays in protecting many species of birds.
Native Americans occupied the Grand Canyon 3,000 years ago. Bones, hair, feathers, and the remains of plants have been found in deep, dry caves high in the rock walls. The Hopi, Paiute, Navajo, and other Native American tribes have all been in the area for at least 700 years. In 1869, American John Wesley Powell explored the Grand Canyon. He recorded much of what we know today about the area. Powell and his group traveled in 4 boats along the Colorado River. He and his group of explorers knew very little about getting over the fast, rocky waters of the Colorado River. In many places, boats could be turned over by giant waves. Soon after they started their journey, Powell's group lost some of its food and equipment. 3 members decided to leave the group. As they walked up and out of the Grand Canyon, they were killed by Native Americans. The rest of Powell's group survived the journey. Starved and tired, Powell and his group reached the end of the canyon. They had traveled by boat down the Colorado for more than 3 months. John Wesley Powell's reports and maps from the trip greatly increased interest in the Grand Canyon. But visitors did not begin to go there in large numbers until 1901. That year, a railway was built that reached the area.
Five million people visit the Grand Canyon every year. The first sight of the canyon can leave visitors speechless. Depending on the time of day, the sun lights up the rock walls in red, orange, and golden colors. The bright colors are the result of minerals in the rock. Their appearance changes endlessly with the light, the time of year, and the weather. At sunset, the canyon walls display fiery red and gold hues. Then they take on softer colors of blue, purple, and green. Most visitors walk along paths partway down the canyon. It takes several hours to walk to the bottom and even longer to climb back up. Some visitors choose to ride mules to the bottom of the canyon. Mules are strong, sturdy animals that look similar to horses. Visitors can also explore the Grand Canyon in other ways. Hundreds of thousands of people see the canyon by air each year. They pay a helicopter or airplane pilot to fly them above and around the canyon. Thousands of people every year choose to explore the Grand Canyon by boat from the Colorado River. These trips last 1 to 3 weeks.
Most people who come to the Grand Canyon National Park visit an area known as the South Rim. That area has shuttle buses that take visitors to overlooks. Fewer people see the canyon from the North Rim. The North Rim is less than 20 kilometers across the canyon from the South Rim, but visitors must drive more than 350 kilometers by car from the South Rim to access the North Rim. Visitors can also see the Grand Canyon from a huge glass walkway called the Skywalk. The Skywalk is on the Hualapai Indian Reservation in the western part of the canyon. The Hualapai Indians built it to increase tourism at the reservation. It opened in 2007. The Skywalk extends more than 20 meters from the canyon's rim. It is suspended more than 1,200 meters above the bottom of the canyon and is shaped like a giant horseshoe. Many call the Skywalk an engineering wonder. But others have criticized the Skywalk and its development. They say it reduces the enjoyment of nature in the Grand Canyon. For visitors hoping to get a view of the entire Grand Canyon, they will have to travel well beyond the state of Arizona. The only place to see the entire canyon at once is from outer space.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.